This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Well, welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. Just got a text from Amy Markscores of the show wondering about the fact that I personally invented check kiting. I didn't know it was illegal. Kind of like, Biden's defense when it comes to hiding classified documents in his Corvette garage. I didn't know it was illegal to keep documents in my Corvette garage where my son Hunter goes in and out and then goes out to hang out with Chinese spies. I didn't know it was illegal. That's kind of my defense. So I'm going to take the Biden defense when it comes to check kiting. Because I didn't know it was illegal until I went to law school, and I'm sitting in financial transactions class one day, and the professor is talking about this idea of floating checks when you don't have the money, and it's a federal offense. It violates federal law. And I thought, hey, wait a minute. I thought I invented that when I was 10. So apparently I didn't really invent it. Welcome back to Camo X. Brad Young here this evening. And I always forget to do this, and people remind me often. I want to give you my email address. I get lots of emails at my law firm, and I always enjoy responding to listeners. If you ever want to shoot me an email at any time, it's never a problem. My email address, B Young, that's the letter B, Y-O-U-N-G, at HarrisDowell.com, H-A-R-R-I-S as in Sam, D as in David, O-W-E-L-L.com. Always, always love hearing from listeners. Today is National Irish Coffee Day. And I'm gonna pick on Matt here for a second. Matt, you ever had an Irish coffee?
No, but
no.
Are you asking me that because I've got red hair and I'm very pale?
No, I'm asking it because you're in your 20s, and I thought 20-somethings like to, you know, try different drinks.
No, I've never had one.
Never had an Irish coffee. Well, it was on a cold, wet day, I believe the story goes, in 1942, and there were these cold and weary travelers to this small Shannon airport in southwest Ireland, and they found their way to this restaurant. And I can imagine that this restaurant was probably, it was all wood. You know, there was a wood bar, there was a wooden interior, they had wooden stools, they probably had some curtains where they kept all the stuff in the back. I'm trying to set the stage here for you, because to warm up his guests, Chef Joe Sheridan, he would serve folks hot coffee because it was cold. It's apparently cold a lot in Ireland. And he would serve them hot coffee, but he spiked it with whiskey and he topped it with whipped cream. And the passengers who went in there on this particular cold, wet day in 1942, they asked him if it was Brazilian coffee. I guess because it tasted exotic. And what's more exotic than Brazilian stuff, right? So he said no. Sheridan responded and said, "This is what I call Irish coffee, not Brazilian coffee." And of course, Irish coffee's main ingredient is what else? Irish whiskey. So that's how it got started. And I always like this idea of stuff that gets a national day, because what do you have to do to get National Irish Coffee Day? I don't know, but I do like the idea of Irish Coffee Day much more than some of the other silly national days that we have, because this is actually something you can go and celebrate. You can go to your favorite watering hole, you can get an Irish coffee, and just imagine that cold, wet day in 1942 when it was deemed Irish coffee. So that's something you can do. We're going to be coming up here after the break, rather. We're going to have an interview. And I don't know, I believe I talked to him a week or so ago, columnist Charles Lipson. He is a prolific columnist, and he always comes up with things that provoke my thinking. It makes me think about things that I haven't thought about before. So he'll be coming up here in just a moment after the break. But later in the show, we've got a lot of other topics to discuss. One of the topics, and this is for Ken, if my good friend Ken is still listening out there, he accuses me a lot of times of taking just conservative positions. But I completely disagree with a position taken today by Ron DeSantis. And I'm going to break that down for you, why I think Ron DeSantis is wrong and why I think he should get on the bandwagon when it comes to laws regarding the death penalty. And obviously the death penalty is important because of, look at some of the shootings that we've experienced here very recently. The death penalty is important for prosecutors to use to get convictions. So I'm going to talk about how Ron DeSantis is absolutely wrong when it comes to the death penalty. But also in the show, we're going to talk about some polling data, about how Washington really doesn't have any, or rather I should say the American public feels that Washington doesn't share their values, doesn't share your values, doesn't understand the things that you need from a government. They don't understand that. And polling data came out today that truly reflects just how out of touch Washington is when it comes to representing you in our nation's capital. But coming up next, Charles Lipson, syndicated columnist. Stick around on At Your Service, KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature, with over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. And as I mentioned before the break, every time I read Charles Lipson's columns, they make me think, they expose me to ideas and thoughts that I hadn't pondered before. And I always learn something every time. And in his column this week, he talks about the battle over what schools teach and what they should teach in terms of preparing for the changing economy. So joining us this evening is syndicated columnist Charles Lipson. Hey, Charles, welcome back to Camo X.
Thank you, Brad. As I told you last time, A, I love talking with you. It's
Thank
fine.
You.
And B, when I grew up in the Mississippi Delta south of Memphis, we used to listen to KMOX because it came through Clear Channel, and I could listen to the St. Louis Cardinals, who were my baseball team.
That's great. Well, I think you live in Chicago now, so I don't think you want to advertise that you enjoyed listening to the Cardinals while you're living in Chicago. That could be dangerous to your health, my friend.
Man, I tell you, when I got into the Cardinals, it was Musial and Shane Ding.
Oh yeah.
Oh, man, what a team.
Well, our Scott Rowland from the Cardinals made it to the Hall of Fame yesterday, so the Cardinals are still good, and on any day, certainly better than the White Sox. So you might want to check us out.
For many years, recent years, they had one of the greatest catchers.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
He's going to be a first-round Hall of Famer guaranteed for Yadier Molina.
Man, just watching him throw out people at second base.
Oh, and
a treat.
Oh, it was a treat. And how about all of the runners who didn't run because they thought, oh man, Yadi's going to nail me. He's going to nail me like a carpenter working overtime. There's no way I'm going to run.
People off of first base.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and they would lean in the wrong way. But you know, when you talk about people who didn't run, that's a very deep point, Brad. Because that's what deterrence is all about. And those of us who study international politics and wars and such are very interested in things that don't occur. And, of course, it's hard to understand why something didn't occur. But let's go back to what you wanted to talk about, which is I start off with a concept that we're in something I would call the cognitive economy. It's a kind of industrial revolution like the one that brought us the cotton spinning machines in the 18-teens and 20s. And then at the end of the 19th century, cities like St. Louis were built around heavier industries. In St. Louis's case, one of them, of course, was the mass production of beer. If you think about something like that, it couldn't have beer spoils, right? Unless
sure.
you put in preservatives, and you needed refrigeration, you needed trains, you needed all these things that were part of what we would call the Second Industrial Revolution, steel and electricity and automobiles and chemicals and so forth. And we're in the midst of something equally profound right now.
Yeah, and I like the term that you use, cognitive economy. And I guess give us a better explanation. What do you mean by a cognitive economy?
Instead of, if you look in Chicago, let me give you an example. If you go around Chicago, if you go from downtown out to Midway Airport, you pass through something called the Bungalow Belt. And these are small homes for middle-class people built in the 1940s and 50s. And they were union steel workers and the like. Mm-hmm. If you had a strong back and good hands, willing to show up and do hard work, you could support a middle-class family like that. And those jobs have gone. They've been mechanized, they've been outsourced, they've been moved to other countries and all the rest. The kinds of jobs that people have now require a lot more education and cognitive skill. Not all of them, but quite a lot. And the ones that are much more routine are being replaced increasingly by machines. We don't have people in car factories that paint cars anymore. That's done by robots.
Sure.
Somebody has to build the robots. Somebody has to program the robots. Somebody has to repair the robots when they break down. And those are all, they don't necessarily require a college degree, but they require a fair amount of education and adaptability.
Hmm. And that's, I see your point, because now that gets to cognitive function as opposed to simply muscular function of building roads, building highways, building bridges, and so forth. But how are our schools right now, Charles? And this is part of the thing that you really dive into deeply in your article this week. How are our schools failing to prepare children for this cognitive economy?
I would go about it in a couple of ways. One is that I think our best schools, the ones that are in the suburbs of St. Louis or the private schools, the ones that are in Chicago's famous New Trier School, but we have a bunch of magnet schools like Walter Payton, they're doing a good job, although they seem to be somewhat less rigorous than they were maybe 20 years ago. But they have more to do. I mean, science is more complicated than it used to be. But the real failure comes in our public schools, ordinary public schools in the cities. I don't know the St. Louis school system very well, but I do know the Chicago system. And basically, it's failing almost every child in it who's not in a magnet school. And they're promoting them. They're giving them
sure.
They're letting them graduate, and I can understand the problem. You don't want to have a 13-year-old in second grade, so there's a fair amount of social promotion. But the fact is, I went to a little school in a town of 2,000 people in northern Mississippi, but the classes were quiet. I mean, you could actually hear the teacher. There wasn't disruption. There was. We learned to diagram sentences. We had fairly rigorous classes all the way through. Now, we benefited in a way from the fact that women couldn't get other kinds of jobs. So women who today would be a surgeon or a top lawyer or whatever, were really constrained, and a lot of them taught schools, and we students were the beneficiaries. But the problem with our schools is both that the kids come from broken families, so they're not entering school. They're entering school with a lot of deficits. Your parents, my parents, had enough education that they spoke to us with a rich vocabulary. We picked that up. We picked it also up from our friends, and we learned good manners, and other people in the neighborhood, mothers and fathers in the neighborhood, if they saw you misbehaving, could either correct you directly or would call your parents. Well, think about how that's broken down in cities. So it's not only the fault of the schools, but the schools themselves are just dreadful.
You're so right. We're talking to syndicated columnist Charles Lipson. And a lot of times people are very good at pointing out problems. But unless you also discuss a solution, to some extent, you're just spreading gossip. So one of the things that you mention in your column is a solution. But what I think is interesting is the solution that you did not choose. Is the solution here, Charles, simply throwing more money at the problem?
I wish it were, in a sense. But we really started doing that in great numbers in the 1980s. We've something like tripled the real expenditures per student. In Chicago, we expend something on the order of just under $30,000 per student in school. And, I mean, this is a huge amount. Think of how much that would add up to it in a classroom. And, of course, some students really do need very large amounts if they have physical or mental disabilities and so forth. But you just can't do it with more money. You need enough money. But the way I begin is to ask, basically, is there anything in our society that works well when there's no competition at all? What would your radio station look like if it were the only radio station? You either tuned into KMOX or you didn't listen to radio at all.
Well, and I think a good example, as you know, I'm an attorney here in St. Louis, and my law firm, we compete against other law firms. And I have many, many corporate clients. I represent businesses and corporations in employment law cases who come to me after they had another attorney that wasn't taking good care of them. And that's competition. If I'm not better than my competition, then these clients are not going to come to me.
That's exactly right. I mean, look at Kmart, which virtually invented these big box stores.
It sure did. And
now it's out of business. Look at Howard Johnson's, which virtually invented the franchising of all these restaurants. It's out of business. There were companies that did a better job at that. And you either compete or you get out of the business. That doesn't mean that the people who work there are all unemployed. If they were good workers, they got work elsewhere. But the fact that our schools don't compete is the essence of what I was trying to get at.
We're talking to syndicated columnist Charles Lipson, and I want you to paint the picture for us, Charles, in terms of what does that look like? What would it look like to have competition in schools?
Well, the only way you can get competition, and the flip side of that coin is choice. Consumers have to have choice. So the people who need legal help who come to you have a choice. They went to some other firm. You're competing with the other firm, but you're competing for customers, in effect.
Correct.
And schools don't do that, at least K-12 schools don't do that, unless they're for people who have lots of money. So I want the money to follow the children. I do think that there should be public options. I didn't really mention that in the column. There's only so much space in a column. But if public schools can compete, fine and dandy. And they should always be there as a kind of last resort for people. But it may be that you, Brad, have a job at McDonald's, and it's a pretty long and arduous job. And you need a school for your 9-year-old that will be able to take him for an hour or two after school and do something enriching, because you've still got to be at work. And or you don't have a car, you take a bus to work, mm-hmm. and so you need a school that's close by. Or you're somebody who is an engineer and you've always felt that the key thing for your kid was getting a rigorous math program. And so different parents are going to choose different kinds of schools. Now, if you're in a little town like I grew up in, there wouldn't be room for competition. But in St. Louis and its suburbs, there's going to be
sure.
plenty of room for competition.
And what occurred to me, Charles, as I was yeah. reading your article and pondering yeah. it, this yeah. was what occurred to me. We do have some competition now, and here's yeah. a great example. I have three daughters, and mm-hmm. when my first two daughters were three and under, mm-hmm. my wife and I made the decision to move from one suburb in St. Louis County that did not right. have very good schools, and we moved to a different suburb, Parkway West, that had one of the best school systems in the state of Missouri. So the competition was there because I had the financial resources to sell my house, move and buy a more expensive house in a neighborhood where the schools were exemplary. But most folks, and I recognize this, most folks aren't blessed with the ability to simply move where the schools are. So what I see your proposal and your idea here is to bring the competition that was available to me. I got to move to the school district that fed our needs for our children. You're looking to bring that same sense of competition to people who may not have the financial resources to move to where the good schools are.
Exactly. As I say in Catholic churches, bingo.
Yes. Yeah, but and you also make this point
exactly
in your column.
Right. I mean, but why should ordinary people have to go about moving? I mean, I understand there are many reasons to move. You can move to a safer neighborhood and so on. By the way, I think if you look at what cities ought to do, they ought to have good roads, they ought to keep the neighborhood safe, they ought to have decent schools, and they ought to pick up the garbage. And, you know, these are really basic things, and almost all of our cities fail at those things.
Yeah, the city of St. Louis does on an enormous scale, but you can see why when you talked about this idea of competition, this is
right.
normally not a concept that we apply to schools, but your theory is 100% correct, because in any other area of life, the absence of competition brings poorer quality, not better quality.
That's exactly right. I mean, look at how FedEx competes with UPS.
Yes.
You hardly ever see DHL anymore. The post office on boxes and that sort of thing has really had to up its game. I mean, you know, there are areas where competition won't work, but I don't see why it wouldn't work well in schools. And in fact, some states are beginning to do that. But I make a point which I think is sometimes missing. Imagine that what they said, we're going to give all families a school voucher, and it's going to be for $4,000 per child. Will you, Brad, who have a good legal practice, and maybe you're sending your child to a private school, you could use that to top up the tuition. But a mother or father who has a child who doesn't have that income and wants to send their child to a better school, $4,000 is not enough.
Right.
To pay for that tuition, nor is it enough to create a flourishing environment of competitive schools looking for those dollars. So if you're going to do it, we started out talking about money. If you're going to do it, you have to make sure that each child receives enough money for his or her education to pay for it in full and pay for the books and all mm-hmm. the rest. And we already provide food, and we should continue to do that. But we also want for that money to provide an environment, an ecosystem, where there are a lot of schools competing for
yes.
parents to send their children there.
Well, you nailed it, Charles, and I'm glad that you wrote on this topic, because this is truly a topic that doesn't, unfortunately, get enough attention. Charles, you are a prolific columnist as well. So if folks want to sign up and get your columns every week, how can they do that?
Well, they should send me $150.
No. Well, listen, I want a third of that, okay?
My columns are free, and you can just go to Charles Lipson, LipSon, CharlesLipson.com, and I post all my columns there. I don't really blog anymore, but I do put up things on Facebook and Twitter and so forth, and you're welcome to sign up for me there. You'll find all of that information at my website. And Brad, I hope we'll keep talking. My next column, I'm going to talk about the enemies of free speech.
Well, that's a topic, Charles, that I discuss literally every show that I have here on CamoX, or even over on our sister station, 97.1. Free speech is something I'm passionate about, and I can't wait to read your next column. Charles Lipson, thank you so much for joining us this evening on CamoX.
What a pleasure, Brad.
My pleasure, too. Talk to you soon, my friend. I want to open up the phone lines. What do you think about our schools today? You've read the same stories that I read about our schools, the status of our schools, and Charles Lipson's idea of bringing competition to schools. What do you think? 314-436-7900. At your service. We'll be right back.
Live and local, this is St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Great choice of music there, Matt Pajeski, board operator extraordinaire. You know, in the last segment, we went a little bit long with Charles Lipson because he was posing this great idea of bringing competition to school districts, a competition to schools. And lo and behold, I wanted to bring in, of course, our news reporter here, Sean Michael Lyle. This is something, a debate that's happening literally right here in Missouri today.
Yes, yeah, it was happening today that, well, first of all, there are two bills, one in the Senate, one in the House, and that is a state senator, Andrew Koenig from Manchester. He has a bill, and there's a similar in the House, that would have open enrollment. Basically, that you can send your child to any school, whether you live within the boundaries of that particular school or even that school district. If you can get them there, that you can send them anywhere. And that's that was to create competition to make schools have to be competitive for these students.
Yeah, one of the things that I talked about with Charles Lipson was the idea that competition in any other segment of our society, whether it's radio stations or law firms or goods and services, competition always brings out a better product. Is this the idea that you see, at least that's being advocated by those, particularly, I believe, Representative Brad Pollitt from Sedalia,
right,
of bringing this idea, this concept of competition to schools?
Yeah, that's what both of, and once again, they're both not exactly, but very similar measures. And it is to improve it with competition that they would have to be able to appeal to the parent. And keep in mind that, and this is something that, like parental rights and everything, the parent is the customer. The child is supposed to sort of be the product, but
yes,
the parent is the customer. So you have to do something that the parent is going to want to buy. I mean, they're the customer. I want to send my kid to your school because I like what you're doing as opposed to the other school. Now, one of the people speaking, I believe it was today, was down in St. Clair, the St. Clair R13 district superintendent, who said, I got a little district. I don't have resources. I've got a state championship football team, but I don't have the athletic resources that the big school not too far away has. And my top athletes aren't going to go to my little school because I just don't have the resources. So they're going to go to this other school so they can get better coaches, better facilities. And, you know, there is that possibility of a slippery slope that once that small school with the lesser resources starts losing students, because, of course, that's where you get a lot of your resources from is how many students, then you begin to go down that hill until eventually you disappear. And down the road, who knows, maybe you have these mega schools that you have to travel 50 miles to get to, and there are no little schools. Would you have education deserts all of a sudden? So, yeah, it's six of one and a half a dozen of the other. And I guess not to argue from the other point of view, a school ultimately in America has always been about community and even neighborhood.
Sure.
So yeah, there are arguments to be made on both sides, and that's what's happening this week.
So that debate's going on right now in Jefferson City?
Yes.
And obviously this might be a little too soon to speculate on, but do you think this bill, because a lot of bills get introduced in the legislature, but ultimately either they're not voted on or certainly they may not even pass out of committee. Do you see any traction on this bill, or have you noticed any traction that would send this particular proposal to a floor vote?
Yes, I do, because parental rights is a big issue in this legislative session.
Well, and we saw this in Virginia just in the last midterm election that swept Glenn Youngkin into office.
Yes, parental rights is big, especially in the more rural areas. The thing, though, that I would see is, of course, big city schools, they don't want that. That's the one area where it'd work, is in a large city where the distance between the schools isn't that great. And you can get from, well, your school's not going very good, I'm going to go to this good one over here, and it's just about, you know, the same distance away. But I think there's a good possibility, and this is just my guesstimate, that it could get through the House. I think there's even a possibility that with Andrew Koenig being behind it, that it could even get through the Senate. I don't necessarily see this as something that Governor Parson would sign. And I say that simply because it's a little too far out there for right now, and I don't think that they could work through all of the details at this point.
Very interesting. Sean Michael Lyle, thank you so much for coming in and giving us that update.
Sure.
And I'm sure he will be updating us further on this as the story develops. Again, I want to open the phone lines to you, because to me, this is a fascinating topic. I mentioned that I engaged in competition 20 something years ago when I moved from one suburb in St. Louis County to a different suburb, because my wife and I wanted our kids to go to the Parkway School District because it's a very good school. So we could engage in that competition because we had the financial resources to do that. But should everyone have that same option of competing in schools? 314-436-7900. Call.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
Epic views, waterfall mists, summit sunsets. It's all better outside. And with AllTrails, you can discover the best of nature with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today and find your next adventure.
Live and local, this is St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Don't know much about history.
Great choice of music there, Matt Pajeski, board operator extraordinaire. You know, in the last segment, we went a little bit long with Charles Lipson because he was posing this great idea of bringing competition to school districts, a competition to schools. And lo and behold, I wanted to bring in, of course, our news reporter here, Sean Michael Lyle. This is something, a debate that's happening literally right here in Missouri today.
Yes, yeah, it was happening today that, well, first of all, there are two bills, one in the Senate, one in the House, and that is a state senator, Andrew Koenig from Manchester. He has a bill, and there's a similar in the House, that would have open enrollment. Basically, that you can send your child to any school, whether mm-hmm. you live within the boundaries of that particular school or even that school district. If you can get them there, that you can send them anywhere. And that's that was to create competition to make schools have to be competitive for these students.
Yeah, one of the things that I talked about with Charles Lipson was the idea that competition in any other segment of our society, whether it's radio stations or law firms or goods and services, competition always brings out a better product. Is this the idea that you see, at least that's being advocated by those, particularly, I believe, Representative Brad Pollitt from Sedalia,
right,
of bringing this idea, this concept of competition to schools?
Yeah, that's what both of, and once again, they're both not exactly, but very similar measures. And it is to improve it with competition, that they would have to be able to appeal to the parent. And keep in mind that, and this is something that, like parental rights and everything, the parent is the customer, not
yes.
the child is supposed to sort of be the product, but
yes.
the parent is the customer. So you have to do something that the parent is going to want to buy. I mean, they're the customer. I want to send my kid to your school because I like what you're doing as opposed to the other school. Now, one of the people speaking, I believe it was today, was down in St. Clair, the St. Clair R13 district superintendent, who said, I got a little district. I don't have resources. Mm-hmm. I've got a state championship football team, but I don't have the athletic resources that the big school not too far away has. And my top athletes aren't going to go to my little school because I just don't have the resources. So they're going to go to this other school so they can get better coaches, better facilities. And, you know, there is that possibility of a slippery slope that once that small school with the lesser resources starts losing students, because, of course, that's where you get a lot of your resources from is how many students, then you begin to go down that hill until eventually you disappear. And down the road, who knows, maybe you have these mega schools,
right?
That you have to travel 50 miles to get to, and there are no little schools. Would you have education deserts all of a sudden? So, yeah, it's, I mean, it's six of one and a half a dozen of the other. And I guess not to argue from the other point of view, a school ultimately in America has always been about community and even neighborhood.
Sure.
So yeah, there are arguments to be made on both sides, and that's what's happening this week.
So that debate's going on right now in Jefferson City?
Yes.
And obviously this might be a little too soon to speculate on, but do you think this bill, because a lot of bills get introduced in the legislature, but ultimately either they're not voted on or certainly they may not even pass out of committee. Do you see any traction on this bill, or have you noticed any traction that would send this particular proposal to a floor vote?
Yes, I do, because parental rights is a big issue in this legislative session.
Well, and we saw this in Virginia just in the last midterm election that swept Glenn Youngkin into office.
Yes, parental rights is big, especially in the more rural areas. The thing, though, that I would see is, of course, big city schools, they don't want that. Even though that's, to me, that's the one area where it'd work, is in a mm-hmm. large city where the distance between the schools isn't that great. And you can get from, well, your school's not going very good, I'm going to go to this good one over here, and it's just about, you know, the same distance away. But I think there's a good possibility, and this is just my guesstimate, that it could get through the House. I think there's even a possibility that with Andrew Koenig being behind it, that it could even get through the Senate. I don't necessarily see this as something that Governor Parson would sign. Hmm. And I say that simply because it's a little too far out there for right now, and I don't think that they could work through all of the details at this point.
Very interesting. Sean Michael Lyle, thank you so much for coming in and giving us that update.
Sure.
And I'm sure he will be updating us further on this as the story develops. Again, I want to open the phone lines to you, because to me, this is a fascinating topic. I mentioned that I engaged in competition 20 something years ago when I moved from one suburb in St. Louis County to a different suburb because my wife and I wanted our kids to go to the Parkway School District because it's a very good school. So we could engage in that competition because we had the financial resources to do that. But should everyone have that same option of competing in schools? 314-436-7900. Call or text. I would love to hear from you. Brad Young, at your service. Believe we're on the last segment of the show tonight. Thanks for sticking around with us on a Wednesday evening. Brad Young here with you for just a few more minutes. And at the top of the show, I teased something. And being a man of my word, I always want to at least do my best to keep my word. I wanted to mention the definitive and share with you just for the next few minutes the definitive answer to what does the law say about whether it's President Biden's documents and near his Corvette in his garage. What about President Trump's documents at Mar-a-Lago? We just learned, I believe it was late yesterday, that Vice President Pence had documents at his house that were classified. And of course, the Babylon Bee reported that he also kept a book from his Boy Scout troop on how to tie knots, and he returned it to his scout leader. That's just my Pence humor. You'll get it later. So, but I wanted to talk about the law on this because it's really not complicated. And when you take politics out of it, it's not hard to understand what the federal law says on this subject. I'm just going to mention three federal statutes and how they apply, regardless of whether you're President Biden, President Trump, Mike Pence. Honestly, the person we haven't heard from is Hillary Clinton. Because I don't know if Hillary Clinton kept any of the documents from when she was president. You know, I don't know whether she has any documents left over from when she was president. All I do know is that, and I am not making this part up, yesterday, Whoopi Goldberg on The View, she said that when Biden was vice president, he had the power to declassify any documents that he may have kept in his garage. And I literally screamed at the video monitor when I'm watching this clip because I wanted to say, Whoopi, I love you. I love you, honey. But I loved you in so many movies, including Jumping Jack Flash. But a vice president is not the president. And the vice president cannot declassify documents in our system of government. So she needs just to go and maybe read the Constitution. That might be helpful. But in terms of the law here, there are about three statutes, and I'm just going to mention a couple of words from it to show you what prosecutors will be looking at in terms of deciding whether there's any, as President Biden said, if there's any there, there. If there's anything there, this is what they're going to be looking at. Under 18 U.S.C. 793, that's the Espionage Act, the U.S. Espionage Act. At this point, it criminalizes and allows prosecutors to prosecute anyone having unauthorized possession of or access to or control over any document relating to national defense, national security, or anything that's been classified. Under that scenario, that applies to all three, President Trump, President Biden, Vice President Pence. But the rest of that statute says, who willfully retains the same and fails to deliver it to an officer or employee of the United States entitled to receive it. So there's two parts to this. There's the one part, you have to have it, it has to be in your possession. And secondly, you have to willfully retain it. Let's look at the situation. This is a situation where I think President Trump probably, or at least from an objective analysis, is most likely of these three individuals to violate that because he willfully retained those documents. Now, the question becomes, can, in fact, the president declassify documents at will? That's the defense that President Trump is asserting. That's a fantastic theory. But right now, there's no what's called controlling legal authority to determine whether the president can simply, by thinking, I'm going to declassify this document, does that, in fact, declassify the document? We just don't know the answer to that question. But at least, ostensibly, President Trump did willfully retain those documents to the point where the FBI had to come out, execute a search warrant, and forcibly remove those documents from Mar-a-Lago. Second statute, it's 18 U.S.C. 1503. It very similar language. It says that whoever corruptly obstructs or impedes or endeavors to obstruct or impede the administration of justice, well, the recovery of documents can easily be construed as administration of justice. So that could also apply to President Trump. I don't think that it would necessarily apply to President Biden or Vice President Pence. There's another statute, 18 U.S.C. 1519. It says that someone breaks the law if they conceal, cover up, falsify, or make a false entry in any record or document with the intent to obstruct justice. Again, I don't know that that necessarily applies to Biden or Pence, but it may, in fact, apply to Trump. But having gone through all of that, even though it seems like at least on those three statutes that I mentioned, that Trump had possibly gone over the line because of his willful retention of those documents, there's two reasons why I don't think that anyone will be actually prosecuted under these statutes. First of all, like I mentioned with President Trump, when he removed those documents, he was the president. And the president does have the authority to classify and declassify documents. There was an issue that came up during the Trump administration where he tweeted out a picture of a photograph of a North Korean missile launch. And the question was that classified? Yes, it was. It was a classified photo. But at the point that he tweeted it out, he declassified it by the very act of him sending that out via tweet. Was that smart? I don't think that was smart at all. Was it legal? Absolutely, it was legal because he was the president. So when he brought documents to Mar-a-Lago as president, he could have easily declassified those simply by the fact that he removed them from the White House. So I don't think that a prosecutor is going to want to test that particular law in this situation, since all the documents have ultimately been restored, recovered. There's no ongoing problem. But secondly, and this is the bigger issue, in the mind of any potential jury, is there any difference between Pence, Trump, and Biden who brought documents home and failed to return them? I don't think that most people would find that to be a problem. They would put all three in the same category. So in the mind of a potential juror, why should you be prosecuting Trump when you're not prosecuting President Biden and you're not prosecuting Vice President Pence? And so for those two reasons, even though it appears on the surface that President Trump violated the law more so than the other two, at the end of the day, I don't think we'll see any prosecution. You may see a grand jury investigation, but you're not going to see a prosecution. And even on the slim chance that there is, I can promise you no conviction. Hey, stick around. One thing I can also promise you with 100% certainty that you're going to want to stick around for the best of Dave Glover. He's coming up at 10 o'clock right here on KMOX. Also, I should be here again in for At Your Service next Wednesday night here on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Thanks for listening. Believe we're on the last segment of the show tonight. Thanks for sticking around with us on a Wednesday evening. Brad Young here with you for just a few more minutes. And at the top of the show, I teased something. And being a man of my word, I always want to at least do my best to keep my word. I wanted to mention the definitive and share with you just for the next few minutes the definitive answer to what does the law say about whether it's President Biden's documents and near his Corvette in his garage. What about President Trump's documents at Mar-a-Lago? We just learned, I believe it was late yesterday, that Vice President Pence had documents at his house that were classified. And of course, the Babylon Bee reported that he also kept a book from his Boy Scout troop on how to tie knots, and he returned it to his scout leader. That's just a Mike Pence humor. You'll get it later. So, but I wanted to talk about the law on this because it's really not complicated. And when you take politics out of it, it's not hard to understand what the federal law says on this subject. I'm just going to mention three federal statutes and how they apply, regardless of whether you're President Biden, President Trump, Mike Pence. Honestly, the person we haven't heard from is Hillary Clinton. Because I don't know if Hillary Clinton kept any of the documents from when she was president. You know, I don't know whether she has any documents left over from when she was president. All I do know is that, and I am not making this part up, yesterday, Whoopi Goldberg on The View, she said that when Biden was vice president, he had the power to declassify any documents that he may have kept in his garage. And I literally screamed at the video monitor when I'm watching this clip because I wanted to say, Whoopi, I love you. I love you, honey. But I loved you in so many movies, including Jumping Jack Flash. But a vice president is not the president. And the vice president cannot declassify documents in our system of government. So she needs just to go and maybe read the Constitution. That might be helpful. But in terms of the law here, there are about three statutes, and I'm just going to mention a couple of words from it to show you what prosecutors will be looking at in terms of deciding whether there's any, as President Biden said, if there's any there. If there's anything there, this is what they're going to be looking at. Under 18 U.S.C. 793, that's the Espionage Act, the U.S. Espionage Act. At this point, it criminalizes and allows prosecutors to prosecute anyone having unauthorized possession of or access to or control over any document relating to national defense, national security, or anything that's been classified. Under that scenario, that applies to all three, President Trump, President Biden, Vice President Pence. But the rest of that statute says who willfully retains the same and fails to deliver it to an officer or employee of the United States entitled to receive it. So there's two parts to this. There's the one part you have to have it, has to be in your possession. And secondly, you have to willfully retain it. Let's look at the situation. This is a situation where I think President Trump probably, or at least from an objective analysis, is most likely of these three individuals to violate that because he willfully retained those documents. Now, the question becomes, can, in fact, the president declassify documents at will? That's the defense that President Trump is asserting. That's a fantastic theory. But right now, there's no what's called controlling legal authority to determine whether the president can simply, by thinking, I'm going to declassify this document, does that, in fact, declassify the document? We just don't know the answer to that question. But at least, ostensibly, President Trump did willfully retain those documents to the point where the FBI had to come out, execute a search warrant, and forcibly remove those documents from Mar-a-Lago. Second statute, it's 18 U.S.C. 1503. It very similar language. It says that whoever corruptly obstructs or impedes or endeavors to obstruct or impede the administration of justice, well, the recovery of documents can easily be construed as administration of justice. So that could also apply to President Trump. I don't think that it would necessarily apply to President Biden or Vice President Pence. There's another statute, 18 U.S.C. 1519. It says that someone breaks the law if they conceal, cover up, falsify, or make a false entry in any record or document with the intent to obstruct justice. Again, I don't know that that necessarily applies to Biden or Pence, but it may, in fact, apply to Trump. But having gone through all of that, even though it seems like, at least on those three statutes that I mentioned, that Trump had possibly gone over the line because of his willful retention of those documents, there's two reasons why I don't think that anyone will be actually prosecuted under these statutes. First of all, like I mentioned with President Trump, when he removed those documents, he was the president. And the president does have the authority to classify and declassify documents. There was an issue that came up during the Trump administration where he tweeted out a picture of a photograph of a North Korean missile launch. And the question was that classified? Yes, it was. It was a classified photo. But at the point that he tweeted it out, he declassified it by the very act of him sending that out via tweet. Was that smart? I don't think that was smart at all. Was it legal? Absolutely, it was legal because he was the president. So when he brought documents to Mar-a-Lago as president, he could have easily declassified those simply by the fact that he removed them from the White House. So I don't think that a prosecutor is going to want to test that particular law in this situation, since all the documents have ultimately been restored, recovered. There's no ongoing problem. But secondly, and this is the bigger issue, in the mind of any potential jury, is there any difference between Pence, Trump, and Biden who brought documents home and failed to return them? I don't think that most people would find that to be a problem. They would put all three in the same category. So in the mind of a potential juror, why should you be prosecuting Trump when you're not prosecuting President Biden and you're not prosecuting Vice President Pence? And so for those two reasons, even though it appears on the surface that President Trump violated the law more so than the other two, at the end of the day, I don't think we'll see any prosecution. You may see a grand jury investigation, but you're not going to see a prosecution. And even on the slim chance that there is, I can promise you no conviction. Hey, stick around. One thing I can also promise you with 100% certainty, that you're going to want to stick around for the best of Dave Glover. He's coming up at 10 o'clock right here on KMOX. Also, I should be here again in for At Your Service next Wednesday night here on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team, rep your city, rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Bitcoin might sound complicated, but the Gemini credit card makes it so simple. Use it like any credit card. Buy lunch, gas, or your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. No annual fee. And right now, you can grab a $200 Bitcoin intro bonus. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stash. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. Issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.